From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made with a heart-wrenching decision when a musician realized she had to leave her job. Bassist Galen McCormick performed with the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra for years, and for many of them, she was keeping a secret. McCormick had stopped being able to hear out of one ear about 12 years ago, but since it didn't interfere with her performances, she kept on playing. It was when the hearing in her other ear began to fluctuate that she realized she had to open up about her struggles. She made the difficult decision to step down from her position. McCormick has been technically deaf for about 1 year now, and throughout that time, she's been speaking publicly about her journey. She shared her story with our WXXI Classical 91.5 colleague, Julia Figueres. And as she told Julia, McCormick is an advocate for people with disabilities. She wants people with hearing loss to know that, like her, they can thrive and enjoy a variety of social and cultural activities, and there is a lot more life ahead, even when this happens. About 48 million Americans have hearing loss, and while it's the third most prevalent condition in older adults, it affects people of all ages and backgrounds. In fact, one in five teenagers experiences some degree of hearing loss. Despite its prevalence, the condition is often stigmatized. Now, representatives from the Hearing Loss Association of America want to change that. The association will host its annual conference in Rochester coming up here, and our region was selected to host the conference due to its reputation for creating inclusive environments and for the stellar work of NTID, the National Technical Institute for the Deaf at RIT. This hour, our guests discuss how advancements in adaptive technology are opening the world of communication to people with hearing loss. We'll also hear personal stories from people who have used their struggles now to help others with hearing loss. So let me welcome our guests in studio. First of all, Galen McCormick, who has already shared her story, as we mentioned, with our colleagues at Classical, and great honor to have you here in our studio at Connections. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us, Evan.
Also with us is Barbara Kelly, Executive Director of HLAA, the Hearing Loss Association of America. Barbara, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
Jim Feuerstein is here, an audiologist and a professor emeritus at Nazareth College, easy for me to say, chairperson for the board of directors at the Rochester Hearing and Speech Center. Jim, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Don Bataille is here, an architect with Hearing Loops Unlimited. Don, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Glad to enjoy.
Well, you know, Galen, I don't know if you're getting tired of telling your story, but I find it tremendously powerful, and I'm really grateful that you're willing to do that with us here on this platform. Can we kind of go back a little bit so we kind of make sure our listeners know what you've been through and frankly how I think so many more people relate to this than maybe you thought early on when these conditions started? So take me back to the early days, because you, in fact, it started in what, in one ear?
Yeah, I lost my hearing slowly in my left ear. I have Meniere's disease in both ears, but at that point it only presented on one side. And for a while, I tried using a hearing aid that was a microphone when that ear went deaf. It was a microphone on the deaf side that played into my better side, but I found it was really confusing, and I ultimately wound up stopping that. And even that, even just a single-sided deafness is still kind of problematic for people because you're looking around, you don't know who's talking. People will come up behind me. I have no idea they're there. So it was very tricky to navigate that. And added to that, I was keeping it a secret, you know, on my job. I didn't want anyone to know because of the stigma that's carried.
And eventually, it was the kind of thing that you probably couldn't deny anymore when what happened?
When my second ear presented with the same symptoms, and it pretty quickly went downhill. There's really nowhere to hide when my whole job is correctly matching pitch with other people. So I did the best I could until the stress of it was really overwhelming. There was a particular medical event that actually caused me to completely lose the hearing in that ear for a long period, and there was really no way to get around that. And it was right around this time, actually, I met Jim. I had gone to the Day of Hearing, and it was at Nazareth, and I was on the faculty there. So I came over, and it was the first experience I had meeting people from HLAA. I didn't even know it existed. And I still carried that stigma inside me that hearing loss is something for older people. This association is probably for older people. But really, they're the ones that help connect me back to the community and connect me with what I could do again.
I think as we go throughout the hour, we're going to see so many relatable things for listeners and important information here. First of all, everyone can probably relate to someone in their lives, maybe stereotypically getting older, starting to lose hearing, resisting the idea of, you know, I certainly can think of my own family member saying, you know, I don't want to get a hearing aid, you know, I'm not that old, or the stigma that goes with it. There's that. But there's also questions on how do you protect hearing? How do you protect hearing in children, in adults? When are we damaging our hearing? We're going to go through all of that. But when you think about Galen's position, you know, you'd been with the RPO for how long?
Just over 20 years at that point.
And did you think there's got to be something that can be done to sort of save this position?
Oh, yeah. I tried so many things. I would play my instrument at home, see what that note is on a tuner, a little device on my music stand, and then I would sing and the note would be wrong. Or I'd try to hear things in my head before I played them. So I went through a lot of gymnastics sort of trying to figure out how I could keep this going. Could I get my colleagues to help me? And we even explored with some recording engineering staff, is there a way to use Google Glass and a microphone? And I realized I'm not really enjoying this process now. This is way too much stress.
And for someone with not only the skills you have, I'm sure a passion for music, was there a mental health impact for you?
Just oh my gosh, absolutely. I absolutely fell into depression, and it comes on very slowly, actually. I really didn't realize it. I'm glad I was working with a therapist who finally said, I really think you need to take this more seriously. I mean, I was already flipping out about what am I going to do about my job? This is what I've done since I was a teenager, really. But more than that, it was just, I don't want to get out of bed. I don't want to leave the house. I don't want to tell people about my story. So there's a very big mental health impact.
In a strange way, I remember having a conversation after hearing your conversation with Julia, with a friend who also loves classical music. And Beethoven's story actually might not do all that much service for musicians today, because Beethoven, documentation in around the year 1800 to his death in 1826, whatever it was, maybe isn't a perfect story, but certainly went through a great deal of hearing loss, mental anguish, but still did Ode to Joy, and Beethoven's, what, ninth in 1824 or something like that, despite all of this. And for people who might hear about these stories, they might think, well, you know, look, you can still do great things. He didn't have a cochlear implant. He didn't have technologies. How much do you think about those kind of stories and versus the reality of what you were experiencing, which was, as a bassist, I don't know if I could do this.
Right. I very much love Beethoven's story now, and I've done a lot of research about it because, believe it or not, there were some things. There were some devices. They're not digital like ours, but I found out there was something they put inside his piano to push the sound back to him. We know about the ear trumpet, which is also ridiculous. Like, if you think we're embarrassed about hearing aids, can you imagine walking around with an ear trumpet? But there were things that he tried to do until he was deaf. And the thing that I found inspiring was that he's writing this music without hearing it, because we have all that knowledge in our heads. You know, we know what our family sounds like, we know what the cat and the dog sound like. But so I actually turned my own career towards composition, and it was partly because of that. I can still hear inside, and I can still feel the instrument when I play. So there is a certain amount of enjoyment, but in terms of performing for people, it's simply not the same for me anymore.
And when you were kind of confronting the idea of losing the ability to hear, what sounds were you most scared of not hearing anymore?
Really, it's music, honest to God. It's music, because I thought, I'll always know what the instruments sound like, but I won't know anything new now. I would be curious for you to talk about this, Don. Like, when we listen to music, we know our brain kind of fills it in and makes it sound right. But when I go stop by the RPO and they're rehearsing, if they're playing something I don't know, it is utter gibberish to me. So I was really afraid. It's a real clinging to, like, what you know you're going to lose, even though you don't know what that is. I don't know what music is going to be written. But I think the way our brains work is fascinating. So I know what my daughter's voice is supposed to sound like. And now that I have these devices, it's not perfect, but my brain kind of rounds it up to write.
When you say utter gibberish, the music of the RPO, if it's not something that a piece you're familiar with, it sounds muddy?
It's not muddy. It's like I have pitch distortion. That's part of it on my technically good ear, where I have a bit of acoustic hearing. So these notes come in wrong. And then a cochlear implant only picks up certain frequencies. So it doesn't play you the full every note on the piano. So now I'm getting other things, but they're not going to go with the wrong notes that my better ear is telling me. So I get this atonal thing happening, and I know that's not, they're amazing, right? I know that's not
yes,
what they're playing.
They certainly are amazing. And here's sort of an awkward etiquette question, but I think it's still probably valuable to ask. And someone like Galen, who's got so much grace and patience with people like me, which I appreciate, I will ask for the sake of our listeners. They're hearing me have a conversation with you. I introduced you as someone who a year ago, what is the medical definition for your condition? Is it deafness now? How do you describe?
I guess, well, on one side, I would be considered single-sided deaf. On the other side, I have a profound hearing loss.
Okay.
So I guess that's the technical.
But today you're hearing me pretty clearly.
Thank you to digital devices. I'm hearing you great.
So take me through the treatment and what's been going on with you then.
Sure. Well, for the disease I have, there is no treatment to cure it or reverse it or even stop it. And I resisted the only treatment there was because it would have taken my hearing in my left ear, and I wanted to hang on to that as long as I could. So on the left side where I have full deafness, I've had a cochlear implant now for about a year. Do you want me to get into what that actually is?
I think so. I think this is important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I really want to just stress this is for when you are deaf. This is not like an in-between option, and it's very hard to qualify for here. But it's underneath the skin, there's a processor with a magnet, and on the exterior of the skin, I have another magnet with microphones and processors. So it's taking your analog sound, making it into a digital file. Like when we make a CD, we take analog sound and make it digital. Then it goes down through the skull into the cochlea, and there's this long wire that has electrodes on it that stimulate parts of the cochlea, which is one of the reasons we can't get all of those notes on the piano, is that you can't squash enough electrodes in there to stimulate every single hair cell. Still, I felt like it's better than nothing. You know, it's a lot better than nothing, in fact.
Is there a moment of, you know, the first time that it's kind of, I don't know, implanted and it's working and you get a chance to understand exactly what that means? Is there an aha moment? Did that happen for you?
For me, it was sort of like over the first few weeks. It took a while to adapt to, but when she first turned it on, I was really nervous because you don't know it's going to work until, you know, they turn it on. It looked pretty good. All the structures of my ear were pretty healthy, but it's still an unknown. So she turned it on and I could hear this major arpeggio going up for 4 octaves, you know, as she tried each one of the electrodes. So we're like, oh, that's a good sign. But then when she started talking, I could only hear those notes and I couldn't make out her words. But still, it was like, I am hearing on my deaf side.
Wow. And that was, again, how long ago?
That was a year ago.
Just over a year ago. Now, what is music like in your life today?
It's really different. It's much more of a, when I'm playing, it's much more of the feeling of how the bass is literally vibrating parts of my body. But also in my new job with performing arts medicine, it's getting to put music in the hospitals and to see the impact that we have almost on a one-on-one kind of situation. Whereas it used to be us playing for 2,000 people, and that's great and that's different with the RPO. I feel like music now is a much more direct and healing thing.
Before I turn to some of our other guests here, I want to ask you, Galen, not as a way to sort of reflect in a way of, you know, regret, but as a way that might be instructive for others who are going to be on your path. Is there anything that you wish you would have done differently?
This is a tricky one for me. I wish and I counsel other people to be open about your hearing loss sooner, but in the music industry, it is really tricky. It is really stigmatized. And so it's hard for me to say to other musicians, you know, what to do about that. But I think if it's going to impact your job positively for your supervisor to know that you have hearing loss, I really think you should step up about that. And there's a lot of resources in Rochester to help you get devices on the job, get training that will help. So that would be it, is just disclose sooner.
It sounds to me like you happen to be in an industry where it is more stigmatized, but for the average person in the population, there's a lot of risk to not talking to people, personal relationships, just daily enjoyment, quality of life, yeah?
Absolutely, absolutely true. And I think just recently this happened. Someone came up to me and she met me a year ago at a conference, but it was right before I was implanted. She said, I just want to tell you, I was so mad at you when I met you last year because you kept walking away from me every time I would talk to you. Well, she wasn't looking me in the face. She didn't get my attention first, and I wasn't implanted, and I couldn't honestly really hear much out of my hearing aid side. And then she went and talked to someone else because she said, I don't understand why everyone likes her so much. She's so rude. And the person had to say, she's deaf. She doesn't hear you. So then it was a really learning moment for her, but also for me that I really had to stop hiding this.
Wow. And the idea of someone looking you in the eye really mattering more than it ever has. We're in a world where it feels like half the conversations people make, oh, eye contact, they're on phones, they're doing what I'm doing right now, just kind of scrolling through something. And I imagine that probably drives you up the wall a little bit.
Now that I'm implanted, it's better. I don't lip read as much anymore, but I was really heavily lip reading before this, and it's tricky because I don't want to be put out with the person. Like, this is a part of our culture, is using the phone a lot and trying to multitask. I'm going to text you while I'm also talking to somebody else.
Yeah.
So I just have to realize, like, be patient. Say what you need. That's the biggest thing I learned at HLAA. Say what you need. And what I need is, can you put your phone down and look at me for a minute? I'm sorry, I'm talking to you like you're my daughter now.
It's okay. It's okay. I think this is helpful and instructive for all of us. And it's better etiquette anyway, to the extent that we can, to make more eye contact, to be more present with people. I need that reminder every day. But especially if I'm talking to Galen, if I'm talking to someone who has experienced these issues in their lives. So I think that's really helpful. And you can talk to me like that anytime you want. We're talking about hearing loss, and there's an event coming up that Barbara Kelly thinks you ought to know about. She's the executive director of the Hearing Loss Association of America. So tell us about the national conference, what's coming up here.
Yes, we're at the Rochester Riverside Convention Center starting this Thursday to Saturday. And Galen is a member of our local chapter, and we're the national organization. And Galen talked about losing music. And when people lose their hearing, they lose something. They lose relationships. They're cut off from communication, they're cut off from people, and all those things that make life important. And we know that untreated hearing loss can lead to isolation, depression, anxiety, and falls. And now there's a cognitive link, a cognitive decline between untreated hearing loss. So our convention, which is here, is we have workshops on practically every topic concerning hearing loss, and it's all in a communication accessible environment. It's really going to be a place where it's okay not to hear well. And with 48 million Americans with hearing loss, all degrees of hearing loss, mild, moderate, severe, people who might just have trouble hearing on the phone or those early signs, this is for you. And every workshop an event will have real-time captioning, so you can follow along with that, and hearing loops, which Dawn will talk about later, which is another technology that people use to get direct audio input and cut out the background noise. We're also having a research symposium, and that's on Friday morning, and that's on genetics and hearing loss. And this is really particular because this is genetics of people who lose their hearing later in life, not born deaf. Much of what we know, people who age into their hearing loss. And we have the top scientists from across the country coming, and it's going to be geared toward people like you and me who can understand this, what they're talking about. And then in one of our workshops, we have a family with four generations of known hearing loss. We have the grandmother whose hearing loss started in her 30s, down to her grandchildren who just realized they have a hearing loss at age 7 and 10. But we have many topics, but the thing that we welcome all of Rochester, but the thing that we're really opening our doors to this great community is our exhibit hall. There's no cost for that. Please come in and peruse the technologies. It's really going to be a place where it's okay if you don't hear well, and we want the community to know that and come out and see us.
The event starts Thursday, runs through the weekend at the Riverside Convention Center.
Yes.
And again, if you want to take part, registration is currently closed, is that correct?
Well, on-site registration is closed, but you can come on down, and there are daily packages. Mm-hmm. There's also a very small fee for our research symposium only. It's $30. I'll tell you, to get the top scientist in the country for $30 and a good cup of coffee, that's a bargain. And you can get more information on our website, which is hearingloss.org, but register down at the convention center. We'll be happy to welcome you.
Hearingloss.org. And listeners, if you want to share your thoughts, questions, concerns about hearing loss at any age and treatment options, you can call the program this hour if you like. It's 844-295-TALK. Toll free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program, connections@WXXI.org. And in our second half hour, we're going to kind of dive into a little bit more about what protecting our hearing really means. And I think Jim will have a lot to say about what we need to know at all ages, starting with our kids, but right now for me, for everyone, I suspect, Jim, there's a lot more technical devices that we all use at all ages than maybe earlier in your career? I mean, technology is always being deployed.
The technology has changed. I'm not sure that the hazard has certainly gotten larger for younger individuals. Mm-hmm. But going all the way back to my own childhood with earphones and stereos at high volume and especially power tools, we know that one of the leading causes of hearing loss in adults, and especially in younger adults, is noise exposure. We have regulations for industry that try to govern and protect people who are working in high noise environments. But what we've seen over the years is that people are doing more and more and more in their own lives with tools and with music and with other forms of noise than they ever were before. So, for instance, I've got a couple of chainsaws sitting in my garage. I've got a couple of lawnmowers because my neighbor has his lawnmower in my garage. It goes on and on and on. And without protecting hearing, we end up with this slowly developing, often, insidious kind of problem where someone will go out and they'll sit on their riding lawnmower, they'll ride around the yard, they won't do anything to protect their hearing, they'll get off the lawnmower, their ears might be ringing just a little bit, but that may dissipate and go away over time, but they may have done a little bit of damage. And then the next time, they've done a little bit more damage. And over the years of exposure to high noise, we develop hearing loss. So it's very, very important that people think about how they can protect their hearing whenever they're in a high noise situation.
And let me just jump in here, Jim, and say I'm sure we'll have questions from listeners about specific things in our second half hour. But when you talk about cumulative effect, I think some of us, probably me included, think, well, if you never break a certain, I don't know if it's decibel or whatever, level of noise, that, you know, as long as you keep it under that threshold, you're good, as opposed to sort of little dents here and there.
And that's somewhat true. In fact, noise exposure, the analogy that I often use when I was teaching was that noise exposure is like sun exposure. If you go outside in January and stand in the sun when the sun is very low in the sky, you can stand there for a long time and not really have a problem. If you go out on the 21st of June and stand in the sun for a half an hour, you're going to get burned because the sun is much higher. Same thing with noise. If you're in levels below about 85 decibels, that's safe for the most part. You can do that for 24 hours at a time and not have a problem. But once you take it over that, every 3 decibels that it goes up, you should cut your noise exposure in half. So if we use the levels that were established by the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, if you're wearing earbuds, for instance, with your personal stereo or your phone or what have you, that's about 15 minutes a day before you're overexposed.
Do you tell people don't wear earbuds, period?
I tell people not to wear earbuds at all. The biggest problem with earbuds is they allow ambient noise to get in from the outside environment, so people tend to wear them at a higher level than they would wear other types of headphones. People will use earbuds while they're mowing the lawn, which means they're really going to crank it up and put themselves at risk. Bad thing to do. The only way to protect your hearing in a high noise situation is with something that's going to block sound from getting to your ears. If you're adding in your own sound with earbuds, you're negating anything else that you're trying to accomplish.
I'm already seeing a slate of phone calls. We've got emails, listener questions. So the Hearing Loss Association of America has already generated a lot of conversation. Let me get a couple of phone calls in. Don Bataille is going to tell his story, and we'll talk about what Hearing Loops Unlimited is as well. But let me grab a couple of phone calls, because if I don't do this now, we're going to have a full board here. This is Emily in Rochester first. Go ahead, Emily.
Hi. How can we help our loved ones that maybe have hearing loss but kind of are in denial about it, or... maybe, you know, they don't know themselves how bad it is. is how can we help them?
So I'm going to repeat Emily's question for our guests. Yeah, I'm going to repeat Emily's question for our guests who have hearing loss. She says, how can we help our loved ones who have hearing loss but are in denial about it? What can we do for them if they don't want to confront it? Emily, can you hang there? And we're going to let our guests weigh in, and then you can follow up if you like. Okay, please stay there, Emily. And let me kind of go around the table, and I guess let's start with Don. What do you think, Don?
Well, I think the first thing that's important is to have your hearing level measured. Go to an audiologist. He'll provide an audiogram, do the hearing test. And there's also a speech segment of that. But you need a benchmark to understand where your hearing loss is to better determine what options you have available. So I think that's the first thing that folks should do is really get a better understanding of what their hearing loss is.
So encourage loved ones to actually get a test, some kind of a measurement. Jim, what do you think?
That's the absolute best way to do it. And what I often recommend is that people will talk to a loved one and say, look, maybe your hearing loss is not bad enough to do something about it right now, but let's get a benchmark. Let's find out where you are now, and then we'll know in the future if something's going on. That's one way to get the person in the door to the audiologist's office and maybe start the conversation. We've had other spouses especially who have simply challenged their loved one and said, I think you have a hearing loss. You say you don't. Prove it to me. And the way you prove it to me is you go and get your hearing tested. Maybe not the best way to do it.
That works for some, maybe not everyone.
It might not work for everybody.
Okay.
But the idea is simply to get the person in and get their hearing tested. And that would be with an audiologist. You don't have to go to your physician. You can go to the audiologist, get your hearing tested, find out what's going on.
How long does the test take?
The test takes about an hour if it's a fairly comprehensive first evaluation.
Okay. What do you think, Barbara Kelly?
Sometimes the person with a hearing loss doesn't realize they have a hearing loss because they don't know what they're not hearing. So it's often the friends and family members who are noticing first, and they're the first line of defense. There are some online hearing screenings. This is not as good as a test with an audiologist, but it might be a start. If your loved one is having a hard time pushing that person to do something, maybe that could be a step, but they really should have an audiologic evaluation. Also, on our website, we have some very simple pamphlets. If you could get your family member to read them, do you think you have a hearing loss? It asks simple questions like, are you having problems hearing on the phone? Are you having problems in background noise? They're more situational that the person can relate to. And I know sometimes that if your physician encourages you to do something, you know, sometimes, you know, I can tell my husband that he should do something, but if our doctor says it, it means much more. However, there are a lot of primary care physicians who, sorry to say, can be part of the problem. I've heard many times that people go to their physician and say, you know, I think I'm having a hearing loss. And they've been told, oh, it's just part of aging. There's nothing you can do about it. Or told my friend she had age-appropriate hearing. And she's,
is there such a thing?
There is not such a thing.
There is not such a thing.
And it doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. She came to me and said, what does that mean? And, you know, if you think about it on the intake form that you talk about, are you having trouble sleeping? Do you smoke? Do you feel anxious or depressed? A few questions. Are you having problems hearing on the phone? Do you think you have a hearing loss? Could start that conversation with your doctor. But it is a challenge to our listener on the phone because there are barriers to care, cost, stigma, but keep at it.
There is no age-related hearing loss. That is very important.
Age-appropriate hearing loss.
Age-appropriate.
And many, I'd also like to address the veterans. Many of the veterans came back from Iraq and Afghanistan with noise-induced hearing loss, single-sided. And hearing loss and tinnitus are the number one disability-related disabilities for service members, and it's a huge problem. So there's a lot of younger people, and soldiers with traumatic brain injury tell us that hearing loss has presented more of a problem than the traumatic brain injury.
Wow.
And if I can,
yeah, please do.
Tinnitus is also one of the primary problems for musicians. So when Galen was talking earlier about the stigma associated with hearing loss in musicians, musicians often have hearing loss. They will first notice it often as tinnitus, and then they'll see it come in other ways. So it's very, very interesting that it's stigmatized in that community.
Galen, what would you tell Emily who's concerned about convincing a family member to maybe get tested or confront a possible hearing loss?
I think all of these suggestions are great, and I can really relate to the reluctance to go and get tested. But another option would be to come to one of the HLAA meetings that we have each month and just meet other people. There is something about seeing yourself in other people and realizing that you're totally fine. There are things we can do to help you. We have a device place you can come and test out different things. So I think it just makes the whole thing a lot less intimidating when you just see other normal people who are getting by and getting help.
And how do we get hooked up with that? How you HLA A groups, you said?
Well, you just go to HLAA.org, the national site, and that'll take you to the local chapter site. Mm-hmm. So there's a number of ways to do that, but just type in hearingloss.org, and you'll find the Rochester chapter. Now, the chapter meets first Tuesday of the month. There's a noon meeting and an evening meeting, different topics, but the programs are great. And
they also have a meeting prior to the presentation each month that they refer to as the Hope Session, which is hearing other people's experiences, which is often for people who are contemplating hearing aids, not sure whether or not they have a hearing loss, and they can come in and hear what other people are experiencing and take that first step to getting some assistance.
All right, I'm going to sneak in one more phone call before our only break. This is David in Pittsford. Go ahead, David.
Hi. I have, I think, a normal age-related hearing loss. I only was screened twice by commercial people who actually offer a little reward, a $10 Wegmans card, if you'll come in and get your hearing tested. And I have some loss of hearing at the high frequencies, which I understand is fairly typical of, I'm 77, I'm healthy, I'm quite fit otherwise. My question is this. The last time I was tested, the audiologist said, well, you need to come back for a more thorough testing so we can determine just where, what sort of hearing loss that is where in your hearing apparatus the loss is stemming from. And I have a certain, shall I call it suspicion or just skepticism? By having tests by people who are selling equipment. And I wonder what you would recommend in terms of getting an objective test.
Yeah.
Should I look for, okay, maybe that question is clear enough.
It is, David, and I think it's a very good one and a very fair one, and I'm going to repeat it for our guests in studio who have hearing loss and are not wearing headphones. So David is 77, reasonably fit, and has experienced what he described as what he thinks is typical age-related, not age-appropriate, maybe age-related hearing loss. His skepticism is that he is suspicious about being tested, being examined by someone who is also selling equipment. In other words, he feels like there may be people who might take advantage of easy marks in the field, and what he wants is an objective assessment. Jim Feuerstein, can you start with what an objective assessment means and whether his question's a fair one?
Yeah, I think it's a very fair question. And I think one of the biggest areas that we run into confusion is between commercial hearing aid dispensers, which we often find in the commercial sector associated with big box stores or the club type stores or what have you, who are often merely a dispenser. They've had a minimal amount of training. They're not really doctors of audiology per se. So when you're looking for an objective assessment, the first is you want to make sure that the person doing the test is a doctor of audiology and or a New York State licensed audiologist. That would be the first step. The second is that You could go through your physician, and they may be able to refer you to an audiologist for a medical evaluation of your hearing. That also may get you some additional insurance coverage for the testing. And there are many audiologists dispense hearing aids. In fact, most audiologists dispense hearing aids. It's part of our care after a hearing loss has been discovered. But you can call the office, find out, talk with the people that are there, talk with your friends who have gone and worked with audiologists and find out who they would recommend. The most critical is you find someone you're comfortable with. And I'm an audiologist. I'm going to say it. I would stay away from the commercial sector hearing aid dispensers if at all possible. And it sounds like that may have been where you were for your first couple of screenings where they wanted to do additional testing.
Everyone comfortable with that answer? Okay, listeners, wow, we're losing the hour quickly. We're going to get our only break. Don Bataille is going to tell you about his story. We've got Tim will take your call from Chi Lai, 31 years old, wants to get a question answered. So much conversation already being generated by the fact that the Hearing Loss Association of America is having their national conference in Rochester this week. And you can attend. There are events and seminars you can attend. There's a lot more at hearingloss.org. It's the Riverside Convention Center from Thursday through the weekend. Let's get that break and come right back here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the next Connections. In our first hour, as Plan 2014 is debated and criticized by lawmakers, we'll have a conversation about the future of life along the Lake Ontario lakeshore. What's realistic, what's not, what should happen going forward. In our second hour, a conversation about wellness. What is it? And if you've seen the recent articles in the New York Times, is it a scam? Can it be? We'll talk about it. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. In a moment, I'll get back to your phone calls and emails. And it looks like we could probably do this all day because this is such a relatable set of questions and challenges for people of all different age ranges. Don Bataille, who is an architect with Hearing Loops Unlimited, what's your story? When did it start for you?
My hearing loss, I guess, occurred quite suddenly. We were walking across Monroe Avenue, and I felt like someone hit me over the head.
In one moment.
Like in that. One moment.
Wow.
It's kind of described as atypical Meniere's, but I lost hearing quite suddenly on one side. I had vertigo, trouble moving, with balance rather, and that continued to occur in several progressive steps. I went through two pair of hearing aids every couple of years because my hearing would drop. I would need to upgrade to another set of hearing aids. Professionally, it was quite devastating. I can recall I was at a major, presenting a major project in Schenectady, and in front of the county board, and we're presenting an architectural design. I was asked a question, and I thought the question came from my right. It actually came from my left, and I'm looking in the wrong direction. Finally, I understand what I think the question is. I answer the wrong question. Needless to say, things went downhill pretty quick when those kind of things happen publicly. So I learned to understand my hearing loss much better. I got involved. I took some classes at Pratt on acoustics. I started looking at how technology can benefit augment my ability to hear better. And I then got involved with understanding different technologies and RF, IR, and hearing loop systems, and became more involved on the hearing loop side, kind of by accident. We were designing projects with assistive listening systems for a number of housing facilities, senior facilities, and on one project, this was actually a church project, person involved moved suddenly to California, and I had to help finish up the project. So it was more of a kind of a self-help volunteer, but I found out how loops really are installed and how they need to be installed correctly. Hearing loops are pretty significant because what they actually do is compensate for the level of hearing loss that we were talking about earlier. High-frequency loss, which happens naturally as we do age. Just to step back a little bit, men will tend to lose their hearing much earlier than women. And what they lose is the high frequency, and those are the consonants, the sounds that make up words. And once we start missing up the missing words, we're missing the sentence. Now we've missed the context. I was in a meeting once, and after the meeting, I had to ask a few questions about what was said. And they said, "Well, Don, you were there. If you didn't hear it, why didn't you say so?" Well, I didn't know what I didn't hear. So those kinds of things become pretty critical. And you need to understand that there are technologies, and I think attending the conference is an excellent way to find out more about how they might fit your personal lifestyle. But when it comes to hearing loop systems, what loops do, as well as increasing that high frequency, because now we have a flat frequency response, so we understand we're hearing words better than we can with a microphone on our hearing aids.
How's your quality of life now?
Excuse me?
How's your quality of life now?
Quality of life improves tremendously.
Yeah.
And a loop, and there's a number of studies where folks tested the loop when not using a hearing loop. Comprehension went from 20% up to 80%, and that was for normal hearing individuals. For people with hearing loss, that percentage went up to 90%. So it's a significant difference because the hearing loop will eliminate background noise, any other distractions. You're only hearing that acoustical voice, mm-hmm. which in this case, I'm talking to a microphone that's 2 inches away. That is what I hear with a hearing loop. So the loop provides a magnetic signal that goes directly to a person's hearing aid or cochlear implant that we are both using. So it's very applicable in places of public assembly, which is now an ADA requirement, and that we can talk about a little bit more later.
Yeah, why don't we hit that now, and then we're going to grab Tim and Chailai on the phone. I know listeners have questions about especially our kids, what's appropriate, and Jim has broken the hearts of lawnmowers everywhere because I've got multiple emails from people about what they wear when they're mowing the lawn. So we'll get to those in a moment here. But tell me a little bit about ADA compliance and what you're seeing there in terms of what's available now.
Oh, okay. Very good. ADA changed quite a bit in 2010. Nationally, that became effective in 2012, March of 2012. But in New York State, it became effective because it was adopted by the building code. So it affects all places of public assembly and what's referred to as Title II and Title III, both public and private spaces. Hearing loss was established as a disability, the ADA developed a set of criteria that responds to that disability and what needs to be done. What ADA recognizes is a couple different technologies, infrared, which is a line of sight, beam of light technology, radio frequency, which we're pretty much familiar with, and hearing loop systems. And what a hearing loop does, compared to the other three, it doesn't require a person to wear a receiver that's transferring that signal that might be receiving through another technology. That's digitally connected to your headset. So with a loop, that signal is sent directly to a person's hearing aid. The requirement for an assistive listening system is any location where audification is provided, any public space. So whether it's a town hall meeting, a concert, a flat-screen TV, providing a program at a senior center, that requirement kicks in, especially for new construction or if they're renovating a facility.
Okay. A lot has changed. And let me grab one more phone call as we try to squeeze in as much as we can. This is Tim in Chailai. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm 31 years old, and for a little while there, I was working in a light industrial factory, And it was just this constant humdrum kind of going on in the background. And, you know, something I just never really noticed, nothing really loud or piercing. But something I did notice is that after working there, my wife, like, kept on asking me questions, and I wouldn't be able to hear her. I'd have to ask her to repeat herself. And, you know, naturally she thought it was, like, selective hearing. But I was like, no, I didn't hear you. Sorry, what's that? You know, and it started to become, like, more of, like, a almost like an embarrassment or like a frustrating thing for me. Cause I'm like, at the time I was late 20s, early 30s. And I'm like, this shouldn't be happening. You know, what's going on? But something happened recently that really kind of gave a gut check to my, like, and I'm not diagnosed or anything, but like kind of just get a gut check into like what I should, you know, be pursuing this, a little more, is that my wife was in the shower with our, you know, 9-month-old, you know, bathing him and stuff. And I was in the house across the room across the house, and I had some music on in the background. And I come back over to the side of the house to, you know, see what's up, see how I can help. And she's like, did you hear me screaming for you? And I was like, what? And just like that in the moment, like all of them, like the insecurity or the man, like this is like just such a headache or whatever, or, like, you know, an embarrassment or whatever. Like all that dissipated because I felt like, man, this is something real. And like in situations like that where, you know, it wasn't anything bad that she needed my help for, but she just wanted me to take the kid. But it could have been a situation where she, you know, fell or the kid was in an emergency and she needed help. I guess my comment, or at least my input, is just like, you know, for those who might be feeling like, oh, this is like, you know, I'm not going to deal with this yet because, you know, it's not my time yet, or I'm not like, you know, 50 plus or 60 plus, whatever. But you never know when situations might happen. And so I just want to share that because that was just this past week. And then hearing your program today, I was like, man, this is, I think there's like some type of thing about the idea of having poor hearing in your young age. Like you kind of feel like this shouldn't be happening, but I think you should pursue.
So, Tim, I'm going to repeat your story for our guests here, but let me just ask you briefly. Have you been tested? Sure. Tell me again. Have you been tested?
I have not, no. And that's okay. You know, my wife joked for a couple times that you need to get your hearing test, you need to get hearing test.
I think just, Jim's like, going to agree with that.
I definitely agree with that. You need to get your hearing tested as soon as absolutely possible, especially at your age.
And Tim, thank you. Thank you for sharing your story. Let me just sort of briefly kind of encapsulate. He's 31 now, late 20s, and someone who has worked in an industrial facility, you know, a lot of loud machines. And by his late 20s, his wife was joking with him that, you know, can you hear me? Did you hear what I said? But recently had an event in which he was at the house, did not hear. His wife apparently was screaming his name. They have a young baby, and he did not hear her screaming for him. And he was very concerned about what that means going forward. And that has been a bit of a jolt. Now, he has not been tested. He's got the marching orders from Jim to get tested. But he said the program today was a reminder that it is not just for older people, older men. It is people of many different ages. And he wants to offer that solidarity while also saying that, Tim, Jim says you're going to get tested, so go get tested. There you go. Thank you for that phone call and for sharing that solidarity. And before the hour's gone here, Jim, just for parents thinking about kids, what are kids most exposed to that's going to cause damage at young ages? What should they be thinking about?
The top thing that kids are exposed to at this point are earbuds. Earbuds are an absolute no-no. If you have a child below the age of 10 or 12, they shouldn't even really have headphones on. If an older child is listening to loud music, they should at the very least have over-the-ear style headphones, noise-canceling headphones if possible, because when you're wearing noise-canceling headphones, you tend to listen to your music at a slightly lower level, makes it a little bit safer. And probably they should not listen for more than about a half an hour per day using any type of headphone and especially earbuds, no more than about 15 minutes. The other is that we have many, many students who are exposed to high noise levels at school because they play in bands and orchestras. And we're trying as much as we can to educate music teachers to the idea of students wearing musicians-style earplugs while practicing. These are earphones that are designed to allow you to still hear the music and hear the notes appropriately, but to hear them at lower intensities, lower volume so that you're protecting hearing. Right. I'm a trumpet player. I feel for the French horn players and the clarinetists who sit in front of us without hearing protection when we're practicing.
Barbara wants to jump in. Go ahead.
Jim, maybe you can verify that, but I'm here to speak for the babies because I see parents with little babies at loud weddings where the band is booming, and there's a myth that if you expose your children to this loud noise, they will get immune to it or used to it. And whenever I see a little baby at a wedding, I say, please cover that child's ears.
I've seen parents with young children at drag racing.
So we got 45 seconds left. Robert, speaking for all the lawnmowers, wants to know, what if I have noise-canceling headphones while mowing the lawn? Can you give me a pass, Jim?
Yeah, this is a pay-me-now, pay-me-later situation. You can use your noise-canceling headphones now and pay for that later by coming and seeing one of my colleagues and spending a couple of $1,000s on hearing aids, or you can simply stop using the noise canceling headphones, get some real honest to goodness hearing protection, over the ear noise canceling phones like you would see on a shooting range, or good foam earplugs or personal earplugs. Get something like that. Pay for it now by not listening to the loud noise while you're mowing. Keep your hearing good, or pay me later. I have colleagues who'll be more than glad to sell you hearing aids in 10 or 15 years.
Hearingloss.org. Barbara Kelly, you mentioned it's free for veterans this week.
Yes, it is. We really welcome the veterans. Please come down. We welcome everybody in Rochester.
All right. So Barbara Kelly is executive director of the Hearing Loss Association of America, which is hosting its annual conference starting Thursday at the Riverside Convention Center through the weekend. Hearingloss.org. I know they would love to see you there. Veterans free. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being in Rochester. Jim Feuerstein, Professor Emeritus at Nazareth College. Thank you, Jim. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
And our thanks to Galen McCormick, Don Bataille, for sharing their stories and experiences. Thanks to both of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
David Griffin, Rob Braden, Megan Mack, I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.